All right, good morning, everyone. Can you guys hear me okay? Thank you for getting up and hopefully caffeinating. So we don't have a clicker, so I'm usually a pacer, but I'm going to be a pacer with a kind of a finger erect. Good morning. I'm here to talk today to you about whether daily deals are killing the small business. I'm Kara Nortman. I'm the Senior Vice President of Consumer Businesses for CityGrid Media. And I specifically manage Urban Spoon, City Search, and Insider Pages. So the question of the day is, are daily deals killing the small business, or are they the best thing to happen to the small business bottom line in this century? Are consumers loving the daily deal and discovering great new things to do in their cities, or are consumers fatigued and overwhelmed and really quite skeptical that these daily deals are all they're cracked up to be? So, just today, quick outline. I'm going to spend some time up front discussing from where we've come, our history. Then I'm going to move into the state of play today, the last 3 years, and the craze that's emerged out of the daily deal trend. And then in the back half of the presentation, I think the really exciting piece, I'm going to spend a bunch of time looking at some really game-changing trends that are emerging out of the daily deal chaos. And look at a few different quick case studies as to what some big companies and really small innovative companies are doing to capitalize on that trend. So I just want to kick this off with a quotation that I think sums up the state of the daily deal space for me. This was written by Noreen Malone, a writer for Slate, who attempted to live on daily deals for a week. "We want to gorge night after night on affordable Thai fare and to guzzle Merlot at wine bars seemingly more numerous than all of the grapes in America, and then to drop hundreds of dollars on removing the dental stains and fleshy dimples that result. We might not know it, sitting in our cubicles, that we want these things, but take 50% off the sticker price, and suddenly we do." And to me, this captures, you know, kind of the trend. In the beginning, probably all of you had this experience. You had this delightful, impulsive buy of something you had no idea you needed and thought was going to be fantastic, and now we're somewhat overwhelmed daily and thinking, I probably don't need another Botox injection or a pole dancing class. So what I want to do now is take a quick look back at the history of the deal. Deals are not new. So we talk about deals as if they've sort of Groupon invented the space. But really, since people could walk and talk, and since there was some degree of scarcity of resources and division of labor, deals and discounts have been used to lubricate trade. So we have, probably actually if we went back to biblical time, well, not in the Bible, my guess is that Abraham and Sarah, that Sarah's family probably offered Abraham, 10 sheep, 8 goat, and 4 olive trees. What we don't know is what was the opening bid. So as you can see here, we have, the Middle Eastern bazaar, fur trading in North America, and then we get into the coupon. And the coupon actually first came about in the mid-19th century with Coca-Cola. But it really gained prominence in the 20 years post-World War II with the sort of Norman Rockwell-esque nuclear family and the celebration of the housewife. And by the mid-60s, 50% of America were using coupons, so one in every two families. Then where this gets interesting to me and sort of the forefather of the trends that we're seeing today are in the mid-70s. My experience with deals as a kid was I have these memories of going with my father down to, the warehouse next to LAX Airport to buy big screen TVs for 50% off. And it had this feeling of sleaziness and sort of, kind of back alley trading and, thought perhaps this guy had just sold an automatic weapon next door. But in the mid-70s, the Price Club arose, and then, Costco came out of that as well. And this was the first time we have the concept of membership and high quality at low discount. And it's a brand that has continued to kind of grow and rise, and still today, I think the highest quality wines can be found at Costco for fantastic prices. So then we move into the 2000s and the digital age, and digital couponing and digital deals has seen tremendous growth. But for the most part, and you have Mercado, which was actually the first online group buying site in the electronics industry, flash sales, et cetera. For the most part, though, these deals were deals that were oriented more so around e-commerce and product-oriented deals. And so, the biggest change moving into the Groupon and Living Social era is that these were deals that had to do with services and local services, not products. One quick note, I'm going to spend some time now talking about Groupon. specifically. But Groupon is really meant to be emblematic of the industry as a whole. We all know that Groupon is the number one player in the industry, with Living Social as the number two, and then it falls off dramatically. So, you know, the last 3 years the Groupon tide has risen all digital couponing ships. And this is really to show, I mean, while we're still at the beginning, we've seen tremendous growth, a 10x rise in the past 5 years, close to a third of the country redeeming an online coupon last year. And really, it's just the beginning. So what did Groupon do that was new? The first significant thing Groupon did was connect the online transaction to the local merchant, to a local service. It was the first time you could buy something online and then use it offline at your local business. Groupon created and sort of editorialized the deal. They brought this sense of, you know, kind of this jocular tone, and they brought some personality to what was otherwise a fairly stable or fairly sterile content type, typically X percent off, et cetera, et cetera. Now they plugged, that made it fundamentally more social. You read something that delights you, has a nice tone, you want to share it. And of course they plugged their deals platform into all of the various social channels. And then, you know, the final thing is, there's the old adage in advertising that, you know, you 50% of advertising works, you just don't know which 50% it is. And that's been true in spades for the local business. Local businesses spend hundreds and in some cases thousands and tens of thousands of dollars to advertise. They don't know what they're getting. And the rewards are reaped potentially far down the road. In the case of Groupon and the Daily Deal, Groupon pays the merchant oftentimes before they actually provide the service. And that's a pretty revolutionary cash management type opportunity for the small business. And it's very trackable as well. So this I think is you know, an interesting slide. It shows that out of these innovations, Groupon became the fastest company to hit $1 billion in revenue, as compared to, you know, some of these other internet darlings, and there's much made of Zynga recently, et cetera. Groupon is the fastest growing. You don't do that as a company unless you have done something truly innovative. So now everybody loves to hate Groupon, and I certainly think there are some significant challenges with the model. But we have to recognize this is a business that has managed to build up all of the processes and human capital elements to help them scale to such an enormous size in such a short period of time. Secondly, the local space has been one that's historically pretty challenging to make money. So you look at even, you know, again, Yelp just went public, great company, but it's hard to make money in local. Selling local businesses is not an easy thing to do. And Groupon showed that they actually have been cash flow positive since 2010. They show it's possible. The flip side of this is that when you grow that fast, you're bound to make mistakes. And every emerging business is bound to make mistakes and iterate against their model, whether it's who are they selling to, what are they selling, are they going after the right segments. And Groupon's mistakes are amplified on a massive scale. They have thousands of analysts and reporters and consumers and merchants, so every little tweak in their model sort of ripples across the world. And I think this creates a very significant brand challenge for Groupon. So what is the Groupon effect? How do people feel about Groupon? How do small businesses and consumers feel about Groupon? I've been watching the industry very closely as you know, somewhat of an insider in the industry for the last few years. I've probably read hundreds of articles and reports and spoken to analysts and consumers and small businesses. And I guess at this point, you know, the closest analogy I have to the way people feel about Groupon is somewhat similar to the way people feel about Newt Gingrich. People love him or they hate him, but there's not a whole lot of in-the-middle neutrality. So it really is, you know, if you look at the stats flying around the industry right now, a lot of it is your frame. You can find stats that show consumers love Daily Deals and Groupon, with almost 97% having printed a coupon. But then many consumers feel completely and totally overwhelmed. On the merchant side or the small business side, you have 44% of customers say they have return to the business. On face value, that sounds great. The question is, did they already go to the business? Were they already loyal customers who actually came in with that discount and came back? But hey, they would have come back already. So there's still a lot to be determined about how this industry plays out. And right now, I think it's very noisy and very messy. And it's still going to take, you know, kind of a couple years for things to settle out. So now what I want to walk you guys through is really a little teeny case study from the perspective of the average local business and the average consumer. So meet Joe. Joe is the owner of an Italian restaurant. Joe hears about this Groupon thing. Sounds interesting. Maybe I should check it out. This is a typical day at Joe's restaurant, Joe's Italian restaurant. So here you can see that he's quite busy during the hours of 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. He has this Italian restaurant. It's across the street from a large office building. He gets repeat regular customers coming into the restaurant during that time. And you can see that, you'll notice this on the next slide, these customers are a little bit larger to represent the fact that they pay at nice prices and they're frequent, they're loyal, they come back all the time. Flip side is he runs a dinner service, great food, great quality, but he just has a lot of excess capacity at that time. So Joe decides to run a daily deal, and this is an example of a daily deal that would be an excellent outcome for Joe. He runs a $25 deal for $60 of service at Joe's restaurant. You can see that he is generating a ton of demand when he actually needs it, and some of his customers stay kind of small and slim, meaning they come in, they're a deal seeker, they use exactly the face value. Joe probably doesn't make much money, if any money, on them. But some of them stay and they fatten up and they become loyal customers, and he's built demand when he needs it. Now, if we flip to the very bad version of a daily deal for Joe, this is what happens, right? Joe is actually driving more demand exactly when he doesn't need it, when he's already busy. And what he's doing is he's displacing and possibly angering his loyal customers with these skinny little gray people. So this, I'm not going to go in the economics in massive detail, but this is just a quick view of the economics. So Joe ran a deal, $25, consumers paid $25 for $60 of value. And Joe, off of that $25, pulls in $12.50 of revenue. Groupon gets the other $12.50, historically a 50-50 split. So he gets $12.50 of revenue for $60 of service. He has about a 33% variable cost, so his costs are around the $20 to $21 range off of that $60 of service. So he actually lost $9 by serving this customer. So there's a lot of variability at the unit level based upon the amount that the consumer actually spends when they come in. If they spend more than face value, the deal tends to be better. If Groupon or the daily deal company takes a lesser revenue share, the economics tend to be better. But this is when you see the angry small business testimonials out there, this is what they're talking about. So there are other questions for Joe to consider. It's not just, as we saw at the unit economic level, did this deal make me some money? The question is, will my new customers come back and pay full price? And we talked about this a bit, but there is some recent data that shows, 44% said they came back and did come back to that business. Again, but the question is, and the research shows, that much of that 44% might have already been your customer. So again, you just gave them a one-time deal. For no real good reason. The next question, I think this is a very important and intangible one, is did it hurt my brand? Remember, Joe runs an Italian restaurant. And this is a pretty interesting study that was done out of BU and Harvard that took a look at 16,000 Groupon deals run across 20 cities in 2011 over 6 months. They looked at those deals and then correlated those deals at those companies and those transactions to the ensuing Yelp reviews and ratings over that period of time in the subsequent 6 months. And so what you'll see here is that the volume of reviews and ratings went up tremendously, which is typically a good thing for a business. More content is very positive. However, the actual rating on Yelp, as you can see, declined meaningfully. And those little bars in yellow down there are actually reviews that quoted keywords like Groupon, deals, coupons, and those were actually disproportionately lower than the rest. So This is a very important consideration. How do you make sure that whatever incentive or deal you're pushing out is hitting the right target customer, one that you can serve well and you can delight so that they will leave, you know, kind of a positive legacy for consumers to come? Meet Jackie. Jackie's your typical daily deal consumer. This is Jackie circa 2008, which is when Groupon emerged. She is 36, a mother of two, high disposable income. And Jackie discovers her first Groupon while on Facebook. She sees a discount up there for the little kids gym near her house and has thought, I've always wanted to try that. I'm going to check it out and, you know, I'm going to share it with my friend Mindy and Sarah. They're going to love this. So, you know, in the beginning, 52% of Groupon's initial referral traffic came from Facebook and Twitter. And as a comparison, Google only generated in the low single digits of referral traffic. And that is really the flip of most businesses. And again, it showed how social Groupon was from the very beginning. Flash forward, 2010, Jackie's quite overwhelmed. She has 10 new deals in her inbox. They're about to expire. And there's a lot of data on this, and this is probably the most prevalent thing I hear when I speak to my friends who used to use daily deals. Too many emails, don't even open them, fatigued. So we look at these Groupon subscriber numbers, but if you're not opening your email and you're overwhelmed and you're signed up for four of them, you're probably not going to transact as often. Finally, we have pissed Jackie. She's disgruntled. This comes from the common problem you hear about frequently as well, which is expiring deals. And here we have, again, a very interesting statistic that is higher than you would expect, but 61% expire before being redeemed. Now, many of merchants still will accept the redeemed coupons, so the actual rate of expired coupons is lower, call it somewhere in the 20 to 40% range, but that's an interesting statistic. And finally, we have embarrassed Jackie, and this is, again, another trend that may feel obvious, but it's very interesting, which is something I used to ask myself. But you're out to dinner with friends, and do you want to pull out a crumpled piece of paper when the bill comes? It's I don't know where the social norms pan out, but it's certainly not something that I would feel comfortable doing. So this comes from a study out of Cornell and Rice University, specifically looking at restaurant daily deals. But interestingly enough, close to 90% use the daily deal with their family or themselves. And, you know, your family is stuck with you, so you can embarrass yourself as much as you'd like. However, people are not using daily deals with their friends. So, big question, will daily deal sites thrive or die? You could be a bull or a bear based entirely on customer acquisition costs, right? So, Groupon has spent over $900 million in marketing to generate over $1 billion in revenue. That is not sustainable if Groupon has to continue spending it anywhere close to that level. So the bet, and if you read all of the industry reports, the bet is that acquisition costs, or the amount that Groupon and the other daily deal sites have to pay to get someone to first come in and subscribe to their emails, will go down considerably. Now, the interesting thing to me about this bet is that it is one of the only businesses I've ever seen where their model is fundamentally at odds with their core customer, unless done in a very nuanced way. And by that I mean Groupon will make money and be profitable and thrive if you, as the daily deal consumer that they spend money to acquire through paid search or something like that, come back and transact a bunch of times. As the small business, you're running this heavily discounted deal with the anticipation that you're pulling in a new loyal audience base, not one that's going to be constantly marketed to go and use at other businesses. So that's a fundamental business model issue where you want your customers to do well if you do well. Second, the percent of the voucher paid to the business is evolving. So you saw in the last example, Joe gave 50% of his take to Groupon. That's coming down with competition and just kind of horror stories. And then here, I say, you know, you must show a clear ROI to the small business. We've moved from an American system to a Russian system. And by that, I mean, Groupon and daily deals were innocent until proven guilty. Small businesses don't have a lot of time to analyze how their business is trending. And they just thought Groupon was a great thing. They heard great things about Groupon. The flip side is now their antennas are up. You know, they're hearing about merchants losing a ton of money. And so we've moved to a Russian system where the daily deal businesses, companies are guilty until proven innocent. This is something I see in my life. Through Urban Spoon, I run a local sales team, and we call on small businesses and restaurants to sell them a reservations product. And very frequently, one of the first things that we hear from the restaurants we call on, are you a daily deal company? If so, we do not want to talk to you. So, you know, their antennas are definitely up. And then finally, it's all about brand. Brand, you know, brand, brand, brand. And this is where I think Groupon has a significant challenge. And so, you know, on Groupon, I guess I'm going to just get on my soapbox for one second here, and then I'll get off and get into the interesting new things coming out of this. But Groupon has a lot of very smart people in that company, and they are going after all of the most interesting trends in the industry, whether it's Groupon Now, Groupon Reserve, Groupon VIP, Groupon Goods, Groupon Live. The challenge for me is that they're going after all of them at once. And you have a business here that has the biggest assets in the world, you know, in the local space. They have 143 million consumers who are subscribed to an email on one side, and 280,000 businesses who've run a deal. If I were Groupon, I would spend every second of every day turning into a data-driven company and figuring out both explicitly and implicitly how to get the right consumers into the right businesses. And until I have transformed my company's DNA into one that is excellent and best in class in doing that, I wouldn't do anything else. So, finally here, this is my kind of quick armchair view of behavioral economics. So here's kind of my thesis. So prior to 2008, you had two different persona types. You had the deal-seeking consumer and the price-seeking consumer. The price-seeking consumer is the consumer who equates high price with high quality. Behavioral economics actually show that these people truly enjoy high-priced events better because they associate them with high quality. Flip side, you have the deal seeker who is value conscious, and they're willing to make trades in quality for the right price. So 20% off, and I'm a regular Pampers user, I'm happy to move over to Huggies. And here, what I think has happened is for a moment in time, these two personas came together during the time of Groupon. And so you had this moment in time perception that you could get high quality for a low discount, that the world had changed and that Groupon had changed it. Expectations rose for all the issues we described prior for consumers and small businesses. The bloom has come off the rose, and people are segmenting back into their natural behavioral patterns. So you have, you know, the high-end foodie and the last-minute adventure traveler. They want deals, they want incentives, but they want exclusivity, and they want to make their lives easier, and they want high quality. And then on the flip side, you've got, you know, the any Indian food will do guy and the CrossFit bar method or Pilates girl, just get me to sweat. So out of these, again, kind of this returning to our natural habitat, we are seeing some very interesting trends arise, and now I'm going to get into those. But it's basically the trends that we're going to get into really emerged out of the awareness and the changing consumer patterns and behaviors and the problems that the daily deal space has created. So the first big trend I want to talk about is big existing brands and what they're doing in response to sort of, you know, the deals and specific daily deal mania that's emerged. You know, one quick thing to note are that in many of the other big online trends that have kind of gone on in the past 10 years, the company that created the space is very rarely the company that builds the big long-term sustainable model. So in the case of search and Google, social networking, Facebook, these guys were often the third, fourth, fifth, 10th, 20th company to come to market. So, you know, if you're betting on who's going to figure out how to market small businesses and how to pull in the right kind of consumer to small businesses, Amex, Groupon, I mean, Amex has been around for 175 years, gets brand, has huge assets, huge reach on both sides, and is innovating really impressively and aggressively. So, you know, one of the most interesting daily deals I've seen, actually, probably the most interesting one I've seen in Los Angeles came from Chase. It was, it came to a colleague of mine who's in the audience. It was a 5-course tasting menu at one of the hottest restaurants in LA with, you know, a fireside chat with the celebrity chef. I was disappointed that I didn't get access to that deal. I'm not a Chase card membership. Membership has its privileges, not for me. In the case of Amex, Amex is doing a whole lot of things to innovate around vouchers, transactions, deals. They just announced a deal, a new partnership this week with Twitter, where they're providing credits on credit card statements for their consumers, pushing deals out through Twitter. But specifically, I want to talk about the Small Business Saturday. This was a new Hallmark holiday that Amex created in 2010, and it's a Hallmark holiday that had really nice policy kind of implications: support your small business, shop local. President Obama, a bunch of celebrities got behind it. Shows the power of, you know, the Amex brand as well. Basically, this was Amex's answer to Black Friday, Cyber Monday. So they created the concept of, hey, shop small for your holiday gifts, and for every $25 a consumer spent at any participating Amex, any local business in the country that took American Express, American Express would give you $25 credit on your statement. So, and then, you know, secondarily, Amex partnered with a variety of new media, digital, social brands. So Facebook, YouTube, Foursquare, Clout. On Facebook, for example, consumers were, you know, liking and spreading the word around this day. Businesses could go in and get a bunch of marketing tips from within Facebook. And I think the other thing to point out is that this was not a one-time shot in the dark promotion. Facebook launched this in 2010, rolled it out for a second time in 2011. So this is something that Amex is taking sort of a multi-year view of and has a lot of patience as to how they build their brand in this space. So finally, here are the results. 103 million Americans shopped at Small Business Saturday. That means one in every three Americans shopped. Small businesses saw their transactions go up 23%, and importantly, they built a long-term marketing channel or relationship with consumers on Facebook. And then this is just my own personal circle to bring it home. I had 88 businesses participating in my local 1 square mile zip code, and 33 of my friends had liked this page, and I hadn't actually heard of this until the past month. Next, I want to look at sort of a newer company that really has embraced brand. And it's kind of, you know, again, the trends I'm going through go from more evolutionary and potentially obvious to more revolutionary. And so this company, Savored, I don't know how many of you have heard of Savored, but it's a very interesting company that's focusing on the restaurant vertical that really knows the customers they're targeting and has a product that's positioned to deliver against those target segments. And it starts with just the way they describe themselves on their website and their merchant marketing materials, et cetera. So if you go into their site, they describe themselves as a merchant-friendly digital marketing platform for the nation's top restaurants. They use words like unforgettable, concierge, insider. So you've got, you know, top restaurants and kind of white glove service. If you go into Groupon's website and you're not subscribed to an email, or they don't recognize you, the first thing you see and the only thing you see is 50 to 90% off deals. So there's very, very different positioning between these two businesses. The way they've rolled out their model is fairly innovative as well. So this is how it works. They provide full inventory control to the restaurant. So they go into a restaurant and they say, when are you slow? When do you need demand? So this is, you know, somewhat coming out of the yield management issue we talked about earlier. And the restaurant will only put up, you know, kind of a discount or a deal at the time when they need to drive incremental business. So high-quality restaurants love this. All restaurants need incremental business. All restaurants. It doesn't matter how hot you are. You have slow times and you have cancellations. They require a diner to pay $10 to commit to getting a reservation at a certain time. And this is the way they shape the demand into time frames when the restaurant needs it. So they pay $10 for standard 30% off. It's not 60% off. It's not 90% off. It's 30% off. It's right in that sweet zone of consumers are getting a deal and restaurants can still make money. And that $10 commitment gives the perception of driving in the right kind of consumer. And if you look at all of their demographics, they're very desirable and work very well in selling restaurants. To the point below, there's no printed coupon. There's no embarrassing, you know, pull it out of your purse. It all happens on the back end. You come in as a Savored reservation, you get your bill, you see the discount. And then they're really following a push-based model, which means they're not about, they're following a pull-based model. That's a typo. Ooh. Do we need a plug? So they're not about email. They're not driving through email marketing. They really want consumers to come in and search with intent for something they want to do right now. So they're not hoping that you might stumble upon, you know, a pole dancing class you didn't know you want to try. They want customers who think, huh, you know what, I might be willing to go out a little early or a little later to a restaurant I really want to try. I'm going to come to Savored or one of their partner brands. And then here are just some quick results that show show how this is working for in a couple select examples. So Kitachai is a popular Thai restaurant in New York City, and they have generated $35,000 in incremental profitable monthly revenue. That is very compelling for a business. On the consumer side, you can see here they actually run a little promotion every year where they get consumers to take pictures of their receipts and post them on Facebook. But they say they have seen consumers save as much as $600 on a check. And here's an example of an actual receipt we pulled from Facebook where a consumer spent close to $1,000, saved $300. Great for the consumer. And restaurants, they're okay with consumers coming in and spending $1,000 in a seating. So next I want to talk about a trend that I think is actually one of the most revolutionary trends in local business marketing. And want to talk about a little company you probably haven't heard of called ThinkNear, based out in Los Angeles, that I'm very impressed by. So this is the concept of proximity marketing, and it really is trying to solve the challenge of yield management or driving demand when businesses most need that demand. And what they do is they're a bunch of statistical guys, and they take a look at what they've done is they've modeled out typical demand patterns for different types of businesses. So, you know, restaurants have different demand patterns than, or, you know, dinner restaurants have different demand patterns than coffee shops, than salons, etc. So they will look at when do your customers flow in over the course of a day and over the course of a week. They will also pull in real-time data. So how does a change in weather, traffic, events potentially impact your business? You can imagine if you're a coffee shop, you may want to push out a different offer if it's really hot or if it's really cold. You want to go from the cappuccino to the iced latte. And what they do, and this is really important, is they auto-generate for the merchant. So they make it very easy, 5 to 10 different campaigns per week per business. So again, in the case of the coffee shop, they may have one campaign before the morning rush, at the morning rush, after the morning rush, on weekends versus weekdays, on cold weather versus warm weather. And they, you know, with a click of a button, they do that for the small business. This is very different than the way Groupon Now went to market. Groupon Now actually put the onus in the hands of the small business. And Groupon Now is a very similar product that Groupon is currently trying to roll out. So Groupon puts it in the hands of the small business. They're less likely to put up as many campaigns. The way the campaigns are worded and structured are likely to be less effective. And this company spends extensive time A-B testing. What that means is they test different types of deals and offers, different types of creative photos, wording, et cetera, to see what converts the best. And then finally, they focus on building very significant density. So they turn on markets by going and turning on businesses or getting them on their platform in a half a mile radius. So, you know, this hits quality customers nearby when a business needs them, as opposed to the deal seeker. Businesses love this. It's also, again, a local search way to discover for consumers in times of need. It's not something you don't know you want, but it should be something as you're walking down the street is relevant to you right now, whether you search for it directly in a branded environment or it pops up in an ad. Now, with anything revolutionary, there are big challenges, and this is no exception. So the massive challenge here, and this is significant, is building enough traffic. With that traffic, I mean is consumer traffic, consumers actually getting in front of these deals such that this type of model can work. Because it is much harder to get consumers' attention when you're not pinging them constantly with emails. And here are some quick results. So this business ran a test in New York City over the summer. They signed up 400 merchants or small businesses in 10 weeks. At the time, they were actually, over that 10-week period, they became bigger than Groupon Now in New York City. So their sales proposition really resonated. And across 10 million impressions, here are the results. So they saw a 2x increase in click-through rates when they added location and distance to their ad creative. Redemption rate was, this is a very high number for anyone who knows redemption rate and deals that are driven in this way. For restaurants was highest. Salons didn't convert, maybe not surprisingly. People are not looking to change their stylist on the fly. And then the data point that's the most interesting to me and the most interesting potentially for the daily deal space is that they saw, these are guys, you know, that analyze, you know, every one and zero that you know, that could potentially cross their screen. And they saw no discernible pattern around the discount rate. So whether you offered 50% off or 10% off, they really saw no pattern, which means if you are trying to target customers nearby in need, they just want to get a sense of they're getting a good deal or some deal or some discount, and then they will convert. And then the final trend that I want to go through today is loyalty-based incentive deals. This is another one that I think is a pretty revolutionary trend, and another one that's going to be very difficult to roll out. So we have tens of companies now trying to build products in this area. And the reason is this nice little statistic up here, which is 15% of your customers generate 50% or more of revenue. And I believe that comes out of a book called The Loyalty Effect, which was written about 15 years ago and is still one of the tomes on customer loyalty. But, you know, the loyalty space is a very fertile space, because if you as a business get a handful of customers to become more loyal in a monthly period, that is likely to be worth a lot more to your bottom line than doing a massive discount that's kind of scattershot across a much larger body of consumers. So these guys in particular, and sorry, most of these companies, by the way, if you stumble upon them, they have words like punch and stamp in their name, because most of them are specifically kind of trying to evoke this concept of the digital loyalty card. So here you see an example of a company called Punch Card. It's the sort of buy nine, get one free kind of concept, and the idea is you can consolidate all of your local loyalty cards into one application, and even more importantly, that you can get rewarded for your loyalty at places that don't have cards. They're taking, a very unique approach to bringing merchants or small businesses into their program. So they right now are live in Los Angeles. They have 150,000 businesses in Los Angeles, most of the businesses you would care about. This is one of the big challenges for launching with any business. How do you get 150,000 businesses in a particular area? It's very expensive to call on businesses. They're busy. It takes a while to convert them, even if your product is entirely free. So what they do, though, is that they actually turn them on without the small business even knowing that they're a part of this program. And then they themselves issue a cash back reward to the small business. So Noodle World is not actually a customer of this company. But if I get 9 punches at Noodle World, I'll get a check in the mail for $17. And their proposition or their hope is that they will then very easily be able to call up the small businesses who are starting to see this kind of traffic and say, by the way, did you know that we know who your loyal customers are, and we're rewarding them. Might you want to get involved? And so the idea is that this is a great lead generation tactic to actually sign up businesses and get them to listen. So, you know, the way they're doing this on the consumer side, how are they confirming the purchase without the merchant's involvement? Because, you know, that is one of the trickier parts, changing the way the small business does business, integrating it in with their point of sale system, is they actually put the full onus on the consumer. The consumer has to take a picture of their receipt. They use OCR technology to extract data out of the receipt and structure it. So not only can they say, yes, this consumer was there, but they have a very rich back-end database that can tell you what they spent and what they bought each time they were there. And that's presumably very valuable information to the small business. So out of that, they are building this very robust back-end system for small businesses to come in and market in very targeted ways to their most loyal customers or their least loyal customers. So as a small business, you can go in with this data and say, I would like to run a campaign where I am only targeting, low frequency but high spend customers. I want to run a campaign to only for first-time customers. And they enable you to go down to even the individual customer level. So this is interesting. I really think that, you know, this is another massive trend that we'll see a lot of innovation around in the next few years. The challenge with this is a couple-fold. It's one, they are putting the onus on the consumer, and so there may be a question of how many consumers are actually going to sit there and take a picture of their receipt. There is the point of sale issue with most small businesses. And then finally, you know, my advice to them was gamify this, make it fun, make it exciting, stroke their ego so small businesses actually want to come into this dashboard, because small businesses are so busy, they want you to do the work for you, which again is one of the appealing things about that last company, ThinkNear. So these are really the kind of the trends that I see emerging out of the awareness and the challenges of the daily deal space. So I would say for certain daily deals or prepaid transactions and vouchers are not dead. They've actually highlighted a massive opportunity. Whether Groupon remains a very big and thriving question, I think that is highly questionable. But there will be many heirs to the industry they've created, so we should all be grateful to them, because small businesses will hopefully be able to market more effectively and drive customers in. Consumers hopefully will get deals and offers and incentives that are more and more relevant to us personally. And so, in sum, it's not the end. Whatever Winston Churchill said, it's not the end. It's not even the beginning of the end. It is really just the end of the beginning. Thank you, guys. So I think I think we have about 20 minutes for questions. So I think they want you to come up to the mic.
Sure. Hi. Great presentation. What is your message to small business owners who, let's say, a room full, some of us may be listening to you? What would you say to them about Groupon and maybe others? But Groupon is the big mama out there. Should they use it? Should they not? Can you just say one answer? Or is it qualify?
It's a little bit qualified, but I can give you some quick tips. If you are a business that has low variable costs, right? So the amount it costs for you to serve each incremental customer that comes in is low, then Groupon is much more likely to work for you. If you are a business that is new or is introducing a new concept, let's say you're a restaurant, you're introducing a new menu, a new chef, something that you want to broadly advertise, it's a massive advertising platform. Regardless of whether people actually transact, you will push the message out there. And beyond that, it gets a little bit more challenging. So Groupon does well for companies like tour companies, events companies, travel companies, where if the airplane flies and the seats aren't filled, it's not going to cost them any more money, you know, to give a massive discount. So those are sort of high level, and beyond that, I think you've got to really scrutinize the deal that you're thinking about.
Thank you.
Well, I believe what they do is they look at the restaurants tell them when they don't have, or they typically have availability but don't have diners coming in. They can actually look at the dollar amount that's being driven by those Savored diners at a top line and know that they actually were getting zero prior to doing this on Savored. So most restaurants you go to in New York City, no one is there at 6 p.m., right? So they have a pretty good sense of who their own kind of patterns of demand, and they can gauge it off of that. I don't actually work for Savored, so I can't tell you that with 100% certainty, but that would be my guess as to how they measure.
What if they might be moving, people from one time to another?
I think that's a possibility for sure, but I can't answer that specifically, but if you look at a restaurant and they typically make $20,000 every January, and that January they made $55,000, you could say, well, maybe I moved some people, but net-net, I'm pretty happy with the results.
Are you familiar with Tipper and Deal Current and kind of like the idea of private label branded deals platforms that allow like niche market audiences to push those out? And do you think that makes any difference to the effectiveness of it?
I've spent a bunch of time thinking about that, actually related to both the City Search brand and the Urban Spoon brand, which were two of the businesses I manage, and that we think do have an opportunity in that regard. So We've thought a lot about it, and I think it works very well for certain co-branded or private labeled brands that actually figure out how to integrate the deal and transaction into something they already do well. So an example would be, let's say you're the LA Weekly. You're an editorialized guide to the city. Well, if I just went to the Gold Standard event in Los Angeles, which is their top restaurant reviewer puts out a list of the Gold Standard restaurants. It's highly trafficked in Los Angeles. If you go to the Gold Standard list and then see an option to transact against some of those businesses and go take that experience into the actual physical world, I think that's a fantastic experience, right? It dovetails right exactly into the brand. However, if you just feel like, hey, I need to roll out a daily deals, business because everyone else is doing it, and you don't really think about how to integrate it into your content or your brand, I don't think that's a very good experience.
You mentioned a few things here. One, that most people get turned off by so many email deals, and also the 60% don't redeem their deals. So if you're a small business that relies on subscription e-blast or whatnot, and you see that number go up, what are some ways to lower that percentage, and I guess some alternatives to just subscription-based deals?
From the perspective of the small business owner?
Yes.
Your question is, you don't want your consumers to have a bad experience. You don't want them to buy your deal and then not be able to use it or redeem it.
Yes. And that one, we for example, our company does e-blast deals sort of kind of thing with different businesses. So we have a website, and if people sign up, for example, for three different restaurant deals, they're getting three emails a week, and eventually they're going to
Sure.
Because I'm asking if there's any alternative to kind of maybe put them together.
Sure. This is maybe where the piece of the presentation becomes a little bit of a commercial. But the parent company I work for is called CityGrid Media. And CityGrid Media is a company that's a very large local advertising platform for small businesses. So you can come to CityGrid. We have 1.5 million local businesses that advertise with us. What we do is we focus on packaging up all of your content, whether that's your reviews, photos, deals and offers, and we push it out to a network of 300 or 400 websites and mobile applications. So they push it out to the websites and mobile applications I manage, but hundreds of others, from yellowpages.com to Yahoo to Looped, et cetera. So it is more of a one-stop shop where you can come in and say, I would like this deal to be put in front of eyeballs everywhere. I want to come to one place, and I want to see, how it transacts across the whole platform. So you can definitely go to companies that will do that for you. CityGrid's an example of one. Google would be an example of another one. And that'll get you sort of the most comprehensive view. And then, in terms of actually the redemption question, I think if I were a small business, unless I'm doing something that's very time-based, I'd look to put out offers that are more sustainable and that can have, potentially an expiration date that's infinite. As a consumer, I'm sitting on a gift certificate, a deal at home for a high brand sort of workout clothes company, and it's a meaningful one. I've had it for a year and a half. I feel lovely about that brand. I haven't gotten myself over there to actually use it, but I know this brand is going to honor it if I come in a year and a half. They're happy. They're sitting on my $200 for 2 years, and I'm happy as a consumer.
Sorry, there were a lot of copycats of Groupon in Latin America, and actually Groupon bought a lot of those guys. My question is, do you think that PunchCard and all that companies is going to happen the same effect, or they're already having their business plan to grow directly to Latin American and other countries?
So the question, are we going to see the same issues in Latin America? The short answer is I don't know, because I haven't studied Latin America closely, but I would hope and I would guess that a lot of the businesses that are emerging in other countries have learned a lot of lessons from what's happened here. But the things that would catch my attention as a small business deciding whether or not you want to advertise with these companies Are they walking you through economics that makes sense? Are you asking them, ask them questions? How do you target this? How do I know that, you know, the person from the office building across the street that comes here every day, is it going to come with this? Or how can I get at that person, that loyal person, and make them come more often? I think, you know, as a small business, you have to be your own advocate, because, you know, the good news, bad news are there's so many smart people now trying to solve this local marketing issue for small businesses that you know, you have to be your own advocate, because there will be some that really get it and have learned, and there'll be others who are just easy money, copycat, you know, kind of going on and making the same mistakes.
Great. I had a question on Think Near. So how do they get, with all those auto-generated deals, how do they aggregate all those consumers? Is it local search? Is it through app and LBS geofencing messaging? Or?
Sure. Well, what that's actually, you're asking the crux of the challenge, and I don't want to give away too much for them, because I think they've been spending a lot of time specifically on that problem, but I think they ran into that issue, right? How do I get enough people in that area so I can properly target? And the only thing I'll say is that it's a very smart group of guys, and that is now what they've been entirely focused on coming out of that New York trial. So I think you'll see some interesting things coming from them. Right.
To serve up ads that are relevant and to the merchant, not serve up the deals to their existing customers. So how? Where's the data coming from?
Sure.
What do you see it happen?
Well, yeah.
I agree with you.
Well, I mean, I'll answer it a couple of quick ways. So Groupon has 10,000 employees. I think 20-30% of them are salespeople. They have massive campaign optimization teams who are, you know, they've really figured out that process of, once you've sold a merchant, how do you onboard them, diagnose what they need, and move it on through. My kind of arm's length perception of Groupon is that they're more of a process, people-driven company than a data-driven company. So I guess what I mean by that is, for every consumer out there, they have a database of all their transactions. They have whatever information you gave them when you signed up. And now if you go to Groupon, you'll see they're really pushing little hearts when you go to the site. So, do you like this deal? Do you not like this deal? So they're asking consumers to explicitly tell them, hey, yeah, this is something I'm interested in or not. As a consumer, though, I'm not even going, you know, I'm not going to Groupon. I haven't opened, you know, I literally asked 10 consumers in the last week, and universally the answer was, I'm not opening my emails anymore. So, you know, so how do you get to those consumers that are opening them every occasion or not at all? Well, I would look at doing things like, okay, deeply segmenting the customer base, do a win-back campaign. Stop sending emails. Don't send me an email every day. Make a big statement. I am no longer a daily deals email for you, Joe, Kara, whomever. For you, I'm only a monthly email, and I'm going to give you the best one I have that month, and you are going to open that email and want to buy it. You know, I signed up for a company called BloomSpot recently, and they have the option to go through this whole kind of concierge approach initially, and they also call it a concierge. And they're actually the distant number three in the market. And when I came in, they asked me a bunch of questions about myself. I answered them. And then I have since not received an email. I told one of the senior executives there, I said, this has been such a lovely experience for me, because I signed up and I didn't receive an email, and it's been 2 weeks. He said, well, that's a problem. Something is wrong. But beyond that, you know, he said, you know, actually what we do is we spend a lot of time really algorithmically altering when and how you get emails. So if you're not opening your emails, you're only going to get them once a month. If you are opening your emails, we know a lot about you, and we're really optimizing the back end. So I guess that's what I would mean. I would sort of fundamentally challenge some of the basic assumptions of how they operate the consumer side, and I would have the magic database in the sky that's smarter than any magic database out there. In the what data? Yeah, very interesting things in that space. Amex is doing a bunch of all the credit card companies are doing interesting things. There's an emerging class of players. I'm actually working on a concept internally in this area, but basically looking at correlating credit card transactions to consumer behavior. And there are a bunch of companies on the back end that have worked on all of the plumbing to be able to have plugged into all the data processing companies, et cetera, to be able to correlate, you know, your user behavior with your credit card data. Still, I think a little bit of the challenge there is you have to get the consumers to opt in to connect their credit card to whatever, their mobile device. And I think companies like Foursquare, again, which are really innovative, naturally just the name Foursquare for me doesn't evoke a sense of confidence that I want to put my credit card in to, you know, a Foursquare, right? I might be more willing to put it into a Square. So I think, you know, you see obviously that trend with Square as well, and they're trying to go, you know, the whole kit and caboodle, replacing the point of sale service at the merchant so they actually get all the transaction data there and then creating their Square card experience on the mobile device. So Google's going after the same thing with NFC, and so you have phones that are NFC enabled, you even have credit cards that are NFC enabled. So there's a bunch of different ways people are collecting credit card data. I still think the big challenge is solving for it on the consumer side and the point of sale side, but it's not going to get figured out in the next 6 months, but that and the proximity marketing to me are the two most exciting trends for the next 5 to 10 years. Anyone else? Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it.